experience tonight at 9:45 here on Radio 3. The news in just a moment, after a quick trip down the river. Presto from Handel's Water Music, played by Le Concert Spirituel, conducted by Hervé Niquet. And that brings the time to just after 7 o'clock. You're listening to BBC Radio 3. This is Ian Skelly with a summary of this evening's BBC News. The novelist Elizabeth Jane Howard has died after a short illness at her home in Suffolk. She was 90. Her first novel, The Beautiful Visit, was published in 1950 and won the John Llewellyn Rees Memorial Prize. Her acclaimed series of novels about three generations of her family have been adapted by the BBC on television and radio. Elizabeth Jane Howard was married three times. Her first husband was the ornithologist Peter Scott, her third the writer Kingsley Amis. 17 severe flood warnings are in force in England and Wales, where forecasters are predicting strong winds and very high tides over the next 24 hours. The Environment Secretary Owen Paterson has warned of exceptional weather conditions and told people to keep away from the coastline. The winds could reach speeds of up to 80 miles an hour tomorrow. Flooding could affect southern England, Wales, the northwest of England and parts of western Scotland. The Thames Barrier has already been closed to protect London. Iraqi special forces are involved in heavy fighting with militants linked to Al-Qaeda, who've seized control of much of the western city of Fallujah. There have also been clashes in nearby Ramadi, the capital of the mainly Sunni province of Anbar, which has seen protests against the Shia-led Iraqi government. At least four people have been killed by a suspected car bomb in the Lebanese capital, Beirut. The explosion happened in the city's southern suburbs, an area known as a stronghold of the Shia movement Hezbollah. A Chinese railway official has been given a suspended death sentence for amassing the fortune in cash and gold by accepting bribes. State media has calculated that Ma Junfei was making $1,000 an hour in the 22 months he was working in Mongolia. In the city, the 100-share index closed down 32 points at 6,718. And the weather. Heavy rain accompanied by brisk winds will reach the southwest of England this evening and sweep across the rest of the UK during the night. Most places will have a dry, mild start in the morning before the winds pick up again. Well, that's the BBC News and the weather. It's 4 minutes past seven now. And with all that grim weather in prospect, let me now whisk you back to the summer of 2013. It's time for another highlight from the 2013 BBC Proms season, which was on this occasion presented by Andrew McGregor.
The Promenaders have just given a warm welcome to this evening's visiting orchestra, the Oslo Philharmonic, for their first of their two proms. And earlier today I was asking their chief conductor designate, Vasily Petrenko, about his Norwegian orchestra, and he told me that while they might be geographically closer to Russia, after 7 years in Liverpool, he's got the sound he wants there in Russian repertoire. The Norwegians, though, he reckons still owe much of their character to the last two music directors, Marit Jansons until 2002, and now Jukka-Pekka Saraste, who's made them more of a Finnish ensemble, thinks Petrenko. So he's really relishing this evening's opportunity to remind them of their Slavic roots, starting with early Tchaikovsky, his first symphony, Winter Daydreams, ending with late Rachmaninoff, his symphonic dances. And at the start of the concert's second half, Polish composer Karol Szymanowski's beautiful, sensuous and ethereal Violin Concerto No. 1, a great favourite of our Latvian soloist this evening, Vaiba Skrida, as she'll be telling us later. But what about Tchaikovsky's first symphony? He'd only just graduated from the St. Petersburg Conservatory when he started writing it, so is Petrenko surprised it doesn't sound more like a student work?
He's a bit naive, which is great. He's very sincere, very humble in his writing there. And of course it does have the Russian folk tunes and Russian winter in it. I think that he had a program for first movement, obviously, for second, and for Scherzo too. This fantasy of the winter blizzard or something like that, plus the warmth of the fireplace in the middle of the third movement. So Scherzo is pretty much programmed. And then he wrote the finale, which, of course, it summarized what happened before. It includes a lot of music from the previous movements, and it has this glorification at the end. And it sounds, for me personally, as the winter is over, and then there's this pancakes week, very famous in Russia, before Easter, when the people were got wild and mad. There have been fighting between the cities, but the Russian people, after that, they were kissing each other, and then you can already see the first signs of the spring. So this last movement is this transition from late January or February, when you still have a lot of snow, very long nights, towards some celebration, even some wild celebration at the very end. And it's glorification of the spring coming.
Vasily Petrenko, this evening's conductor, with his personal view of the journey on which we're about to embark as Tchaikovsky begins his career as a symphonic composer. Well, the Oslo Philharmonic's leader, Eliza Botnes, just tuned the orchestra here to conduct them in Tchaikovsky's Winter Daydreams, is chief conductor designate Vasily Petrenko.
Thank you. Thank you.
The end of Tchaikovsky's Symphony No. 1 in G minor. The arrival of spring after those winter daydreams, thinks this evening's conductor Vasily Petrenko, who you've just heard with the first of this week's visiting orchestras here at the BBC Proms, the Oslo Philharmonic Orchestra. And Petrenko was dancing his way through that finale. Here he comes, back onto the platform. The whole orchestra standing now as Petrenko bows low in front of the promenaders. Well, there'll be a different kind of Russian nostalgia at work in the second half of this evening's prom, which ends with Rachmaninoff's last orchestral work, his mighty Symphonic Dances. And before it, Petrenko's Norwegians are joined by our Latvian soloist, Biba Skrida, who was telling me earlier how much she's looking forward to making her prom's debut this evening with Karol Szymanowski's highly original and often startlingly beautiful Violin Concerto No. 1. You're listening to BBC Radio 3. I'm Andrew McGregor, live at the BBC Proms. Welcome for the second half of this evening's concert, given by the Oslo Philharmonic Orchestra and its chief conductor designate, Vasily Petrenko. Now, he was telling me earlier that although they last played here at the Proms 5 years ago, there are quite a few new string players making their prom's debuts this evening. And not just our soloist in Szymanowski's Violin Concerto No. 1, after which they'll be ending with Sergei Rachmaninoff's last orchestral work, his Symphonic Dances, written in America, but filled with the composer's feelings for Russia and his own history, hopes and fears, thinks Petrenko, as we'll be hearing. But making her prom's debut this evening is Latvian violinist Biba Skrida, who burst onto the international scene 12 years ago when she won the Queen Elizabeth competition in Brussels, playing the Tchaikovsky Concerto. But Polish composer Karol Szymanowski's first violin concerto was a very different animal, as she was telling me earlier.
It's a completely different kind of piece. It's one of a kind. I can't think of any other piece which would be in that way. I always describe it as a painting or something you see with very, very many details. You can always look back and find some new details, and it's so fragile on one side but so powerful on the other side. And of course it's in one movement, so it's already from the form it's very, very different. And it's just fantasy, basically. It doesn't give you the idea of a traditional concerto.
Is it important for you to feel the poetry that's behind the concerto?
Very much so. It's very inspiring, this kind of piece. I've played a lot of pieces by Szymanowski by now, and I really enjoy his music. It takes time until you get into his music, and it takes a lot of time to discover many of details. I don't think it's possible to discover 100% of all of them. That's what's nice about his music. You can play all your life. But it's a very special piece also because it has such an interaction with the orchestra. It's a little bit sad because all the culmination places, almost all of them, are only for the orchestra, and I'm just in front and listening and wishing I could play with them, but it's such an interesting and fascinating piece.
Now, you must say something about the violin you're playing, because this is the one, it's a late Stradivari instrument, isn't it? And it's on loan from Gidon Kremer. Is this
a
really nice instrument to play, the Szymanowski?
I think it is, because what amazes me about this violin and what I love so much about this violin is the diversity of sound, what I can make with it. It has either the sweetness or the velvety sound, and even during this one kind of a sound I can still find levels of difference what I can do, and it just gives me the freedom of doing this amazing music with it.
Biba Skrida, and by the way, the poem we alluded to briefly was composer's original inspiration, May Night by Tadeusz Mieczynski, depicting the poet's ecstatic reaction to a lakeside wedding surrounded by nature on a summer's evening. And here she comes, Latvian violinist Biba Skrida, Stradivari in hand, and conductor Vasily Petrenko, making her prom's debut this evening with the Violin Concerto No. 1 by Karol Szymanowski. One continuous rhapsodic movement with a cadenza towards the end, written by the dedicatee Pavel Kuchanski. Thank you.
Thank you.
fantastic and unexpected. Polish composer Karol Szymanowski describing his Violin Concerto No. 1, written in 1916 for the violinist who created the cadenza, Paweł Kochanski. And you've just heard it played here at the BBC Proms by Latvian violinist Baiba Skrida, making her eagerly awaited Proms debut. Eagerly awaited by me, at any rate. It sounds as though I wasn't alone, judging from the reaction here in the Royal Albert Hall. Well, Skrida was telling me earlier today she'd love to know what Szymanowski himself might have come up with if Kochanski hadn't been on hand to create that cadenza for him. And after it, such a huge orchestral climax. The solo part is suspended, basically, until it subsides. It's a wonderful moment. Here she comes again, Baiba Skrida. The deceptively demanding concerto, the intonation has to be impeccable, right to the very top of the E string. There are some terribly exposed shifts as well that she negotiated absolutely beautifully. Skrida bowing as the cheers of the promenaders ring around the hall. I read an interview with Skrida for one of these specialist string magazines a while ago, and they asked her what kind of strings she favours, and she didn't even know what kind of E string she used. She says she gets through so many, she just uses whatever's lying around. Well, after that performance of the Szymanowski Violin Concerto No. 1, we began this evening's prom with the first symphony of a Russian composer just out of music school, and Vasily Petrenko and the Oslo Philharmonic finish with the final orchestral work by a Russian composer in self-imposed exile in America, looking back at his homeland with mixed feelings. Sergei Rachmaninoff's Symphonic Dances are from 1940, when the great pianist composer was in his late 60s. And for Petrenko, it feels like a deeply personal work.
In my point of view, it's autobiography. It's about his life and about his vision what happened to the empire, to the country in 20th century. At the first moment, he picturized this great agricultural empire. The first dance, it has its steps, there's really heavy steps, as if you are into the deep Russia somewhere in the village site. And then the second movement is nostalgic waltz, which I think may reflect Rachmaninoff's private life. And then the finale, which is a combination of the brutal energy of the masses and very, very brutal rhythms as well. Plus the middle section of finale, where it all goes to sentences about how beautiful it's still being. And then in the very late stage in Coda, then he has this quote from his Vespers, which in my point of view, it might be this his wish and his hope and his belief in spiritual army, in spiritual force of the people in Russia that will clear the country from evil.
Vasily Petrenko's very personal interpretation of Rachmaninoff's Symphonic Dances. And at the end of the first movement, he quotes the theme from his first symphony, which he'd never heard after its disastrous premiere in 1897. And in the last movement, there's also the Dies Irae chant from the Requiem Mass, overcome in the Symphonic Dances by the quotation that Vasily Petrenko just mentioned from Rachmaninoff's all-night vigil, "Blessed be the Lord." Faith triumphing over death, possibly. Well, the Oslo Philharmonic Orchestra's leader has just tuned the orchestra, and here comes chief conductor designate Vasily Petrenko to lead them through the three movements of Rachmaninoff's last orchestral work, his Symphonic Dances.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
The end of Sergei Rachmaninoff's Symphonic Dances from 1940. And for all its at times almost demonic energy, it was to be his last orchestral work. Eugene Ormandy conducted the first performance in Philadelphia in 1941. The composer lived just two more years, dying before his 70th birthday. And you've just heard the Symphonic Dances played here at the BBC Proms by our visitors from Norway, the Oslo Philharmonic Orchestra and chief conductor designate Vasily Petrenko. Here he comes. Back onto the platform. He was telling me earlier that he feels Rachmaninoff's mixed feelings about Russia's possible future. I heard in the way he asks the tam-tam at the end to vibrate after the rest of the orchestral sound has died, and he was gesturing for that to happen, although, as I think you probably heard, it was drowned out by the sound of the cheers here in the Royal Albert Hall. And right now he's gesturing for the various soloists from the wind section of the Oslo Philharmonic to take their solo calls, not least amongst them saxophonist Geir Holm, cor anglais player Horvath Nurang, and principal oboe David Friedemann Strunk. The horn section again, and the percussion, whose mighty contribution to the end of the Symphonic Dances caused real vibrations here in the Albert Hall. They're getting a really warm reception here tonight. I suspect they brought an encore. Stand by.
Welcome with Honour by Geert Veit, one of his 100 Hardanger tunes. And it was performed there by the Oslo Philharmonic Orchestra and their chief conductor, Vasily Petrenko. And that was an encore to their first prom, given last September at the BBC Proms. And that concert was introduced for us by Andrew McGregor. And there's another chance to hear their second prom concert, again with Vasily Petrenko, tomorrow evening, just after the 7 o'clock news here on Radio 3. On the bill tomorrow night, Beethoven's second piano concerto with the soloist Christian Hila Hadland and Bruckner's Fourth Symphony, all from 7 o'clock tomorrow evening here on Radio 3. And we're back at the Royal Albert Hall later tonight for what was a very well attended and much appreciated late night prom given by the Talis Scholars, celebrating their 40th anniversary. They did so with a blend of music by two giants of the Renaissance, John Taverner and Gesualdo. Well, you can hear that prom tonight in just over half an hour's time at 9:45 here on the home of the BBC Proms, BBC Radio 3. Before that, we're going to join Joan Bakewell in just over 5 minutes' time to meet her next guest in this current series of Belief. He's Professor Dermot McCulloch, Professor of History of the Church at St Cross College in Oxford. They're going to discuss how his beliefs and philosophy have influenced his life and career. And you can hear that in 5 minutes here on Radio 3. Well, having presented a prom in the summer, here's Andrew McGregor again, looking ahead this time.
Radio 3's Here and Now pays tribute to the late John Taverner with a concert of some of the last music he composed. The BBC Philharmonic is joined by Jonathan Lemalu and celebrated Taverner collaborator Stephen Isselis, and we'll be hearing from fellow composer Judith Weir, as well as some archive interviews with Taverner himself.
When I first became conscious in Switzerland after I'd been ill, everything seemed to have vanished. I couldn't feel the God that I used to feel, and the way it came back, it came back in a different form. And it's much more now a question of knowing somehow where there is nothing, there is God. I think that's a Hindu saying.
Here and Now, this Saturday night at 10:05 on BBC Radio 3.
Also next week, Radio 3 steps into the cultural ferment of Europe at the outset of 1914. Music on the Brink relives the music and the culture of five capitals as the world teetered unknowingly on the edge of World War One. Every day throughout the week, we focus on the music and the culture of a different city in 1914, taking in Vienna, Paris, Berlin, St. Petersburg and London. Music on the Brink. It begins each day with Petrarch, Trelawney and Breakfast, weekday mornings, anytime from 6:30 here on Radio 3. Well, as I say, we have Belief in 5 minutes' time. First, though, let's go back rather than look forward and hear a song by Handel, Dear Adonis, Beauty's Treasure.
Dear Adonis, beauty's treasure,
Dear Adonis, Beauty's Treasure, a song by Handel, sung by Nikki Kennedy, with one of the members of the Brook Street Band, Caroline Gibley, playing harpsichord. And that was one of only two arias that survive from a lost work by Handel, his Venus and Adonis, dating from around 1711. You're listening to BBC Radio 3. It's 9:15. Time now for Belief. Here's Joan Bakewell.
My guest on Belief is someone whose own sense of religion has informed his entire life. But his first intended career was forced into a shift in direction by the rulings of the very church in which he grew up, and we have all benefited. Professor Dermot McCulloch is one of the country's most distinguished historians, with books and television series that have consistently enhanced our knowledge of church history, and especially the Church of the Reformation and its leading protagonists, Henry VIII, Thomas Cranmer, and Thomas Cromwell. His biography of Thomas Cranmer won a triplet of prizes, the Whitbread Biography, the Duff Cooper Prize, and the James Tait Black Prize. His History of Christianity, The First 3,000 Years, published in 2010, was seen on BBC Four and BBC Two and won the Radio Times Listener Award. The book and the television went along simultaneously. For 17 years, Dermot McCulloch has been Professor of the History of the Church at St Cross College, Oxford. His latest book, Silence, takes a two-pronged look at religion, both encompassing the many issues on which Christianity has chosen to remain silent, as well as examining its fine tradition of meditation and contemplation. He was knighted for services to scholarship in 2012. Ironically, without the Church of England's ruling on human sexuality in 1991, Professor McCulloch would have been ordained an Anglican priest, and the future might have been different. Dermot McCulloch, how different? Would you have been a parish priest?
Well, I might have gone that way, but I suspect the church might have found me a little difficult to cope with. And what they do then is to make you the dean of a cathedral, because it's a nice prominent position, but you can't do any damage as a dean of a cathedral, except for the cathedral, of course.
That's a very sceptical view of church purpose.
Well, I'm a church historian, and you do get a little sceptical about the church once you've looked at its history, even if you still end up loving it.
Well, you certainly have loved it, haven't you, from the start? You grew up in a Suffolk rectory, three generations of clergy in your family. Your grandfather, I think, a Scottish Episcopalian. So religion was everywhere, and there was nowhere that was not religion.
That's right. And it was such a happy childhood that it was very difficult to distinguish between the church and the rest of life. It was the last phase of that old rural world where the clergyman was the centre of the parish. Harvest festival was one of the big times in the village. I loved all that.
Was it a devout household? How deeply felt was this piety?
Curiously, you didn't talk about it. It was that sort of rather low-temperature, Scottish Episcopalian, no fuss. There was grace at meals, actually, when the Archdeacon came, really.
Trinopian.
Yes. And lots of church. But it was never forced on me.
Because in many a manse, as it were, the child of the manse rebels against the church in the background and does something quite other.
I was a rebellious child, but my father was interestingly rebellious in a very sort of right-wing sort of way, a high Tory rebel, because the family tradition was Jacobite. And that's a peculiar sort of conservative rebellion, and I loved that, actually. And I remember when I went to university, which was at the end of the 60s, my form of rebellion was actually becoming extremely right-wing to annoy my student contemporaries, who were all rather left-wing.
So there was something else that you were aware of from a very early age, and that was the sense that you had that you were gay. The word wasn't current at the time. But what was that feeling?
Well, it was simply an emotional attraction from an extraordinary early age. I think I sort of was conscious of it, well, now knowing what I do now, from about the age of four onwards. And that gave you a sense of being, well, just different from the rest of the world in that rural village. I guess in my teens I began to realise what it was all about and found it utterly disconcerting. But it wasn't the only way in which I was different. There I was in this vast country rectory, only child, clergyman's son. All these were forms of difference. So it was just one among many. Clergy children are all observers of life, and they're also very observed. It's a bit like being a member of the royal family, at least it was in those days. All eyes were on you. and yet you were not part of ordinary society in a